for the
with bureaus in London, New York, Jerusalem, and Ekaterina. This is Chime Network News for the weekend in Sunday, June 19, 2005.
Hi, I'm your host, Tom Payne. Welcome to Shire Network News, the official podcast of the Anglospheric group blog, silentrunning.tv. We're Anglospheric because we speak English and most of us haven't been to the gym for a while. Coming up a bit later, we have the Lawrence Simon Full of Crap Report. This week he takes the side of former President Bill Clinton. Strange but true. And we have the second part of my interview with San Francisco-based writer Keith Thompson, author of Leaving the Left, an article describing the way he's shifted his politics rightward.
But if the left can't get that the discussion now is about what's the best way to empower human beings as individuals, then they're going to be out of the discussion. If they continue to look for broad Marxist-type level, institutional class-based stuff, I think they're going to lose, because it turns out a lot of poor people would rather be millionaires than Social Security recipients.
Tell me the old story. All blogs mentioned in this podcast will be listed and linked in the associated post at silentrunning.tv. So if you miss the web address when I give it, you can go to Silent Running and there it'll be with a clickable link. This is the sixth edition of Shire Network News, and I thought I would ask you, the audience, what you think of it, what's good about it, what's crap, and what you'd like to hear. So if you go to silentrunning.tv, you'll find some polls I've put up so you can give me a bit of feedback. Also, you can email me more substantive advice on what it is I'm doing right or wrong at adslq3pu@tpg.com.au. And I'll repeat that email at the end of the program as well. I look forward to hearing from you. Although if it's just going to be leftist abuse about how the show is part of a Karl Rove-funded conspiracy, then I don't know what I'm going to tell you. You're probably right. What's your point? Right now, though, it's time for
Blog News.
You want conspiracy theories? How about Microsoft and the communist Chinese government? Microsoft's new Chinese internet portal has apparently banned the words democracy and freedom from parts of its website in an apparent effort to avoid offending Beijing's political censors. Users of the joint venture portal, formally launched last month, have been blocked from using a range of potentially sensitive words to label personal websites they create using its free online blog service, MSN Spaces. Attempts to input words in Chinese such as democracy prompt an error message from the site saying, "This site contains forbidden speech. Please delete the forbidden speech from this item." Other phrases banned include the Chinese character for demonstration, democratic movement, and Taiwan independence. Microsoft's in-house blogger Robert Scoble has been trying to defend this apparent collaboration with the communists. He writes, "I have absolutely no business forcing the Chinese into a position they don't believe in." This rather unusual point of view has been blasted to bits by recovering journalist-turned-blogger Rebecca McKinnon, who knows China as well as any Western reporter, and probably better than most, having lived there for a total of 12 years. She says, "But to state that Chinese students and professors have an anti-free speech stance is the biggest pile of horseshit about China I've come across in quite some time, and believe me, there are a great many such piles out there these days. In my experience, most Chinese, like all other human beings I've ever met, would very much like to have freedom of speech. This goes for students, professors, workers, farmers, retirees, religious practitioners, and even many government officials. Many said so to me in on-the-record interviews. Many more told me so privately, in trusted confidence, over beers, or something stronger, among friends." There's more discussion about Microsoft's apparent betrayal of freedom of speech in return for access to the lucrative Chinese market at a very interesting site called Global Voices. With so much potential profit at stake, other Western corporations could well be tempted to go down this path of collaboration as well. It's a weakness of the capitalist system, let's be honest, and perhaps Lenin was right. A capitalist will sell you a rope on Monday that you intend to use to hang him with on Tuesday. Let's try to hold Bill Gates' feet to the fire on this one, though, shall we? There was some good news from Iraq this week with the rescue of Australian hostage Douglas Woods. Like a lot of things that happened in Iraq, details are a little sketchy and contradictory, but everyone seems to agree he was rescued by Iraqi troops with the participation of US and Australian forces. Tim Blair has been all over this story. However, an interesting sidebar is the rather murky role of the man who describes himself, with apparently no justification at all, as the Grand Mufti of Australia, Sheikh Haj al-Din al-Hilali. He rather grandly decided he would imitate Jesse Jackson and flew to Iraq in a highly publicized effort to get Mr. Woods freed. He made a number of statements about his role as a negotiator, told the captors that he valued their jihad, and called for U.S. forces to be withdrawn from Iraq. It all made people wonder if this was about helping Douglas Woods or making an Australian Muslim cleric look like a big shot. Sheikh Al-Hilani's been trying to grab the credit for the rescue, insisting loudly, against all the available evidence, that he negotiated his release. In an interesting development, Australia's ethnic minority broadcaster SBS has been running a news item with the Sheikh making that claim, but the actual interview has now been removed from their website. Inquiring minds would like to know why. Could it be that Sheikh Hilali's bullshit is finally catching up with him? Can he fool all the people all the time? One suspects not. The Kyoto Agreement on reducing greenhouse gas emissions, the 21st century equivalent of buying a papal indulgence to get the soul of a dead family member released from hell, has come back to bite the New Zealand government in the arse. The present, smugly superior Labour Party government of Helen Clark had assumed that because of their unimpeachably politically correct moral rectitude and New Zealand's clean, green, enviro-cuddly image, that they'd be making around $500 million a year in carbon credits. Evil polluting nations would apparently be paying New Zealand to grow trees. Trouble is, reality has come crashing in, as it has an unfortunate habit of doing. It turns out that New Zealand's economy is booming to such an extent that they could wind up paying anything up to $3 billion a year. Here's how it's been reported locally. Opposition parties are calling for New Zealand to pull out of the Kyoto Protocol after a shock report found that the government's calculations of New Zealand's net greenhouse gas emissions were out by millions of tons. The recalculation of New Zealand's liabilities means the government may have to pay more than $500 million in carbon charges in 2012. Previously, officials believed that New Zealand would hold a $500 million credit by 2012. Well, how to wipe out an entire budget surplus, alienate the business community, and guarantee a crushing election defeat at the hands of enraged taxpayers, all in one easy lesson. Well done. Next week on Shire Network News, our feature interview is going to be with the Zimbabwe pundit, who's been doing such a sterling job bringing the incredible story of Robert Mugabe's destruction of an entire nation to our attention. While I was talking to Zimbabwe pundit on the phone recently, he told me about the Carnival of the Revolutions, which various pro-democracy blogs take it in turns to host. It brings together in one entry some of the best posts from the many blogs about the various democratic revolutions which are underway around the world today, and also active resistance to tyranny. They rotate it through various blogs, but if you go to registan.net or Publius Pundit, they should have a post somewhere pointing you to where the latest Carnival of the Revolutions is being hosted. I thoroughly recommend it because it reminds us forcefully that democracy usually doesn't drop fully formed from the sky. It has to be taken and then defended. Also, it's worth reminding ourselves there's still a whole lot of vicious tyranny and oppression in the world which still needs to be fought and destroyed. Gay Patriot is back. For those of you who don't know, Gay Patriot was forced to abandon his blog recently. The reasons are a bit murky because legal action could still be pending, but the bare bones seem to be that Gay Patriot challenged the practice of a particular left-leaning gay publication of deliberately outing right-of-centre politicians and political staffers as homosexuals. Why? Something to do with hypocrisy. Apparently gay people aren't permitted to be anything other than left-wing, and if they do manage to get off the leftist reservation, then they can have their personal lives destroyed without mercy. It seems some people are so threatened of the idea there could be millions of gay and lesbian Americans on the right that they'll stop at absolutely nothing to squash such dissent. Just ask Tammy Bruce about the sort of pressure she's been getting. But as a high-profile conservative lesbian with her own radio program, she's a bit better placed to fight back. Anyway, it seems Gay Patriot has some attorneys working on his case, but of course it's not cheap to defend free speech. So, if you like, you might be able to perhaps donate to his cause. He's got a PayPal button. People should be allowed to live their lives as they choose to live them, and not as some political scold thinks they ought to. And that really ought to be something that both left and right agree on. Amnesty International's ongoing attempts to paint conditions at Guantanamo Bay as similar to those in a Soviet gulag have been ridiculed so widely around the blogosphere that there's no point in singling out any one site as having the definitive post on the subject. My personal favourite, if I had to pick one, would be James Lilacs, who begins his screed like this. The true horror of American torture has been revealed. Let me make light of it. And he does. Also, how about this rather revealing snippet of information from Pavel Litvinov, writing in the Washington Post and quoted, well, in a lot of places, but I first ran across it on the New Zealand political blog Sir Humphreys. Several days ago, I received a telephone call from an old friend who's a long-time Amnesty International staffer. He asked me whether I, as a former Soviet prisoner of conscience adopted by Amnesty, would support the statement by Amnesty's executive director Irene Khan that the Guantanamo Bay prison in Cuba is the gulag of our time. "Don't you think there's an enormous difference?" I asked him. "Sure," he said, "but after all, it attracts attention to the problems of Guantanamo detainees." As the great journalist Alistair Cook would say, well, and if you want to have your left-wing friends have a conniption fit at your next party, and who doesn't, why not wear your I Heart Gitmo t-shirt, available now at cafepress.com/iHeartGitmo. By the way, anyone listening to this podcast in the San Francisco Bay Area can email me a photo of themselves wearing an I Heart Gitmo t-shirt anywhere in the People's Democratic Socialist Lesbian Republic of Berkeley, and you will not only have your photo published on silentrunning.tv, but you'll also receive a DVD of Steve Rosenbaum's documentary 7 Days in September, and a copy of Tammy Bruce's book The New Thought Police, Inside the Left's Assault on Free Speech and Free Minds. In the event of a tie, the person who wears their t-shirt closest to the university will win, and you'll be guaranteed victory if you can get photographed wearing your I Heart Gitmo t-shirt with Sproul Hall in the background. In the event any Berkeley students actually spot you, we will donate your prizes to your estate. Next month, we'll probably be encouraging unionists in Belfast to wear their sash up the falls on the 12th of July. So email me your photo at adslq3pu@tpg.com.au and check silentrunning.tv for the results, if any. And now it's time for our regular contribution from Lawrence Simon.
Hi there, I'm Lawrence Simon, and I'm on Shire News Network to bring you the Full of Crap Report. This week, let's look at the hype on this new book on Hillary Clinton by Ed Klein. I'm no fan of Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, or even legendary funk master George Clinton, but this thing just oozes crap, especially the insinuation that Bill Clinton raped Hillary Rodham to produce Chelsea. Give me a break! Think about this for a second. Put yourself in Bill's boxers for a moment. Bill's on the political fast track. He barely misses bagging a seat in the House of Representatives. The ink is barely dry in his law degree when he's tapped to become the Attorney General of Arkansas. 2 years later, in 1978, he's the youngest governor of that state ever. Not exactly the swankiest of states, I'll give you. Nobody's ever mistaken the Ozarks with the Hamptons. But still, among a population of 1 million banjo pickers, he's pretty much got free rein over the herd of trailer trash tail to pick from. So, with all the anonymous threes and fours he can bag without a fight, why would he be assaulting a two? Especially one he's married to, and in the island paradise of Bermuda, where in the pre-AIDS 70s was sea to shining sea beaches just swarming with more easy holes than a senior citizen's golf course. I don't buy it, and I'm not buying the book either. Ed Klein, your book is full of crap. And now, the rest of the crap. The Wizards of Whizbang did a little research on this thing, went back, and noticed something amusing. Let's look at two quotes from legendary Moonbat blogger Oliver, like Velcro to stupid Willis. First, on the Klein book. Sick effing bastards. What is wrong with these people? What causes them to print and promote this sort of vile, hateful, made-up bullshit? What psychosis is it that drives them to promote it and yell this slime from the highest mountains? They have no shame. They have no decency. Now, a quote from the same blustering bonehead about Kitty Kelly's bush-bashing book. Who knows if the book's allegations are true? Some people say they are. We report, you decide. Also, write to local media and get them to cover this story. Slap together a bunch of lies about Clinton, you're slime. Slap together a bunch of lies about Bush, and it's news. Just one of the many morons at Media Matters showing their true colors. Oliver's also full of crap.
That's Lawrence Simon, whose blog is www.isfullofcrap.com. You're listening to Shire Network News, the official podcast of silentrunning.tv. I'm your host, Tom Payne. Last week, we had the first part of an interview with Keith Thompson, the author of Leaving the Left, which was published in the San Francisco Chronicle. Today, we conclude with the second half of his story of how he's moved away from some of the liberal certainties of his youth and embraced positions more akin to those of the right, although he quite correctly doesn't feel the need to label himself as such. He says his political conversion occurred gradually, but for a long time, he didn't say much about it. He was, like many of us, in the closet.
Oh, I definitely joined the dark side. In fact, I've been living this secret life. Secret, I put the word in quotes, but I've just been slowly coming to terms. And when I came out with this essay, if you will, came out of the closet and wrote this essay, I felt a liberation, which is almost cliched to talk about. But as I began to get letters from people, my friends knew ever since, especially since 9/11, I've been talking openly. And in fact, many people have. Like, there's something very wrong with the Noam Chomsky, Susan Sontag response to that, which is now very well known. Susan Sontag, of course, came out to declare her belief that the people who blew up the World Trade Center were courageous. And American novelist Norman Mailer came out to liken the deaths of September 11th to automobile statistics. They were comparable to that. And, of course, Noam Chomsky is famous for saying that even on a bad day, America is comparable to, on an ineffective day, is comparable to Al-Qaeda throughout the world. So, those kind of responses are obvious. But, yeah, there is a change going on, and I think it's being registered. And interestingly, when we talk about the right, people say, okay, you've left the left, now you're on the right, huh? Well, I'm not going to join you on the right, or what appeals to you about the right? And there's this whole monolithic assumption that, as far as I can tell, the right includes everybody who's not on the left.
Well, for most people on the left, the right simply means Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, and, as far as they're concerned, Sheriff Bull Connor is still hosing down black people in Birmingham.
Absolutely. If you're not in favor of equal outcomes, and if you're not in favor of paying reparations, which is one of the worst ideas, I'm not even going to go there. It's just so completely lacking in any kind of criteria for acceptance. But if you don't accept that, yes, you are in favor of that kind of you represent that kind of reactionary politics. Well, I happen to know that people on the right include everyone from self-styled conservatives, self-styled libertarians, small r Republicans, constitutionalists, federalists. There's a whole range of possibilities. You can actually be opposed to abortion, but in your own life, but you can actually be pro-choice because you understand the freedom issues involved, and you can also be a federalist saying, let's let the states decide. If Mississippi wants to say no to abortion, if it goes back to the political realm, which I devoutly hope it will, I'm pro-choice for the reasons of largely libertarian reasons, the freedom issues about the control of one's body, but at the same time, I want this horrible decision, Roe v. Wade, to be a part of the worst of American jurisprudence, and let this go back to the states. Let Mississippi almost certainly decide no on abortion, but let California, New York, Illinois, Ohio, and other states say yes. That'll be a lot healthier if we return this. I happen to believe one of the main reasons abortion has been so divisive is not just because of the life and death issues, but because it was removed arbitrarily from the political realm by an elite that could not win their case in the political realm.
You're talking about a lot of domestic issues and issues of political philosophy. For a lot of people, and I include myself among them, September 11th was the catalyst that absolutely triggered our change. And in particular, as you were saying, the Chomsky-Sontag cultural left's response, or in fact lack of response to it, that absolutely appalled a lot of people. How important do you think September 11th and the War Against Terror, which is a terrible name for it, frankly, played in this whole cultural change which is starting to happen?
I think it was very big. I think the 90s, the sort of image of the 90s, especially in the United States, was the internet boom, which almost seemed like Francis Fukuyama's, end of history. We had arrived at some sort of permanent, spacious, political, cultural, economic bubble. Well, we didn't think of it as a bubble. We really thought we'd arrived finally at a kind of ultimate progress. Things seemed pretty good. The worst problem we had was Bill Clinton's personal issues, and even that seemed to be working its way through the system pretty well. And then September 11th reminded us that evil, you're not allowed to talk about evil.
You're not allowed to use only that word evil. That's only people who haven't been properly brought up or need therapy.
That's absolutely right. If you're using a term like evil, then you've not owned your own shadow. You know, you're projecting your own shadow. Well, sure, I think, you know, Carl Jung's idea of the shadow is good to bear in mind. If you walk through life and you find that everyone else in the world is angry, it might well mean that you're angry. You've got some anger issues. I think projection does exist, but you cannot explain away evil by psychological projection. And I had an experience in the mid-80s, and I'd already made my shift, but it was the day that Ronald Reagan famously declared the Soviet Union as the focus of evil in the modern world. I went to a dinner party with friends, and it was not even particularly a political gathering, but by the time I got there, it was a potluck. I brought my food in. There was a quality. I thought that someone had probably died in the back room, the tone. I said, what's going on? They said, well, you heard what Reagan said. I go, well, yeah. Well, gee. Well, there was a tone in the room that, you know, we might not make it to the end of dessert, the annihilation, because Ronald Reagan had dared to use the president of the United States, who was so sort of backward and unsophisticated. And the evening went on, and someone noticed I wasn't saying much. They said, what do you think about this? And I let slip that I thought that the survivors of the 20 million minimum who were killed by Joseph Stalin, the sons and daughters and grandchildren, might not think evil was that strong a term or too strong a term. The looks that I got in the room, first of all, I have a pretty good sense of humor, so people thought I was making a kind of David Letterman statement. So they were willing to cut me some slack, but even still, it didn't quite register. But then they realized that I wasn't kidding, and they looked at me as if I had just said that I had taken up child molesting for sport. That was, in fact, if I had said I'd become a child molester, that would have been a lifestyle issue that they could have worked with, and they could have helped me manage the problem.
You can't but be if I really believe about alternative lifestyles.
That's exactly right. But if I was so far gone that I was actually nodding my head that the Soviet Union was evil, that meant that the United States was good in every case. And we know that the United States slavery, we know what we did to the Indians. Well, you know, you can respond to all of those issues about the Indians and all of those other issues about slavery and most slavery. I said to a friend the other day who was telling me about reparations that I'm planning to write an article that I may call Jesse Jackson Owes My Family Reparations, because there's been a great amount of world slavery led by black people with black skin or dark skin have imprisoned quite a few white people. And the point of the essay would be not that we didn't enslave black people, but that slavery is a human problem, not a racial problem. Just as most of what are called gender problems are not gender problems, they're actually human problems, because it turns out, I did a story about this some years ago as a journalist, most in domestic violence, about 50%, surprisingly, but study after study, nearly half of domestic violence is initiated by both genders. So that's a big surprise, but it's actually true. So the left likes to divide these problems up, racial problems, gender problems, and so forth. They actually tend to be human problems, and they have to do with the complexity of human nature, and they're harder to deal with. They're harder for the left to deal with it at that level, because it gives up, requires them to give up their claim to special, privileged, entitled status.
You're not the only person originally on the left who's changed or is in the process of changing to what I suppose we'll have to call the right, but I think that's probably a bad term at the moment. Do you see the left as regenerating itself at any stage in the future, or do you think that it's pretty much hollowed out and the real arguments now are between different varieties of right-wing politics?
I really think it's the latter. I don't think that I think the last bastion for the left is to try to claim this term progressive for itself, which is so laughable on so many levels, but I don't think it's going to work. I think the discourse in the United States and in general in the West has shifted. I mean, you see it with Tony Blair. You just see it in Australia. You see it everywhere. It's shifted from center left to center right. I mean, look at the Supreme Court in the United States. It's definitely the discussion is on the right, and the most creative ideas are coming. But, you know, I have to say the left is wounded now. The cultural left especially. By the way, when I say left, I know everyone who defines themselves as a progressive. There are people, fair-minded people I know, who believe government should have a greater role in the economy than I happen to believe, but they're not socialists and they're not communists. So a lot of good-natured and patriotic people I know on the left. But the cultural left, the hard cultural left, whose names we've mentioned in this discussion, Chomsky and others, they are wounded, and they are like wounded animals. They're not going to give up. And in fact, like wounded animals, there's something rabid. So you see, for example, Howard Dean, who was a moderate governor of his own state, Vermont, now he's really almost like a paid plant of Karl Rove. It's just, you see this increasingly.
Whatever Karl Rove is paying Howard Dean, he should triple it.
I'd say so. In fact, I think Karl Rove is the most, he may be a genius, but to me, probably a hard work day for Karl Rove. He probably comes in at 11 o'clock, clips the newspapers, gives them to his staff, goes to lunch, and I think he should, even so, should probably still get his former pay, because... not to take away from any genius he may have, but most of his genius just consists of reading the newspapers and watching what the other side is saying, Nancy Pelosi and others. There's just a level of desperation, and the volume has got turned up in the past 2 weeks with these first three appellate judges that the Democrats allowed to get through with their so-called compromise. They are absolutely crazy right now with regret at having agreed to that, and they know that the Supreme Court is not far away. Clarence Thomas, I think I'd be willing to bet Clarence Thomas could be the next Chief Justice, which is just too remarkable.
Oh, I would just pay good money to see the response of the Democrats to that.
Yeah, because if they put him on the court 10 years ago, 12 years ago, certainly he's not less qualified. How can they possibly argue, or for that matter, if President Bush wants to be really bold and upgrade Janice Rogers Brown to the Supreme Court, how do they say she was qualified, you know, to go to the Court of Appeals, but now she's suddenly not qualified? I mean, Barbara Boxer will have to stand on her little soapbox to really make that argument make any sense.
So really what you're suggesting is the left doesn't really have much in the way of intellectual resources left to fight this change to the right.
Well, if you're trying to find, there are many ways to talk about left and right. I'd say one of the fundamental distinctions is the left in general tends to see human suffering, causes of human suffering have to do with external, institutional power relations that keep people from having the opportunity. Classic example, Jim Crow laws. And meanwhile, the right tends to say most problems, and again, this is general, and most of the obstructions to human happiness and the causes of human suffering have to do with what's inside your own head. Your motivation needs to be tuned up. Your own skills need to be developed. Your sense of personhood needs to be expanded. But the truth of the matter is, you couldn't tell blacks in the South to try to up their motivation a little bit, what with the Jim Crow laws. No, they absolutely didn't have a fair shake. But the Jim Crow laws are gone. Meanwhile, the left still wants to find institutional power, external. I mean, put it simply, the left says all the problems of the world are external to us. The right tends to say they are internal. Now, there's truth on both sides, but if the left can't get that the discussion now is about what's the best way to empower human beings as individuals, then they're going to be out of the discussion. If they continue to look for broad Marxist-type level, institutional, class-based stuff, I think they're going to lose, because it turns out a lot of poor people would rather be millionaires than Social Security recipients for the rest of their lives.
The left can't work out why a lot of middle-class and even working-class people are voting Republican. They absolutely cannot understand it.
Well, they really can't. George Will said some while ago that there are probably more Marxists on the campus of Harvard than there are in Russia now. I remember when people on the left used to be told, if you don't like it here, go to Russia. But that isn't fair. Go to the Soviet Union. But if you tell people that now, they go to a country that's actually trying to be more like the West. So I think if I were to say anything to the left now about if you don't like America, I'd tell them to go to France, or I'd tell them to go to Germany. Let them go to the Western democracies of Europe, where real high social welfare programs, guaranteed health care, single payer, unresolved immigration issues, a low birth rate is creating just absolute demise of those democracies. If they don't like it here, go try to implement what they want to do in France, because those countries seem to be actually on a slow path toward where the socialist countries are now veering in the direction of West. It's a great time to be a human being on this planet to see these larger shifts.
That was Keith Thompson, who wrote the influential article Leaving the Left, originally published in the San Francisco Chronicle. His website is thompsonatlarge.com. Well, that's it from Shire Network News for now. Remember, you can email me on adslq3pu@tpg.com.au if there's a topic or a person you'd like to see featured on this podcast. So from me, Tom Payne, on behalf of silentrunning.tv, until next week, may your God go with you.